This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Scandal, rumors, intrigue. Front page headlines. Coverage in major media outlets from the New York Times to ESPN. Not normally things we'd associate with the world of chess. But a major controversy has gripped the game for the past 6 months. There are many twists and turns to this controversy, but it comes down to this. The world's greatest chess player, Magnus Carlsen, has accused an up-and-coming grandmaster, Hans Niemann, of cheating, both online and in person. Now, Niemann denies it, but Carlsen stands by the accusations. And 2 weeks ago, the world's leading online chess platform stepped into the fray. In a 72-page report, chess.com concluded that Hans Niemann had cheated in over 100 online games. It also says that his rise in face-to-face games, the ones that decide the world championship, was statistically unlikely. But the report stops short of repeating Magnus Carlsen's most damning accusation, that Hans Niemann cheated in the face-to-face games too. Now, underlying the controversy is a deeper story about how much the game and world of chess have changed in just the past couple of years. How technology has made chess more accessible than ever, but might also be the game's undoing. So let's start today with Danny Rentsch. He's Chess.com's chief chess officer and co-author of Chess.com's major 70-plus page report. Danny, welcome.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, let's kind of describe a little bit who the major players are in this controversy for folks who don't know. So tell us about Hans Niemann. Who is he and why has he had such a spectacular rise in the world of chess?
Hans Niemann is an American grandmaster like many in his generation, grew up playing chess online, and he's always been someone that people knew as a very talented up and coming player. And we've had him playing on chess.com and even our scholastic site chesskid.com since he was a young kid.
And how old is he now?
He is 19 years old.
He's 19 years old. Okay, so and how typical or atypical was his rise through the ranks?
Well, as you said, you know, our report broke down a lot of different angles to look at this, and we take our research into statistics and trying to discern patterns and potential anomalies and how people play very seriously. It's at the core of what drives our cheat detection. And so in that report, as we said, there's, you know, Hans is a very strong player and always has been, so there's no denying that. But there were definitely some moments, some particular events, and some things that stood out as particularly strong. And on the one hand, that's just particularly strong chess. On the other hand, if it doesn't necessarily match regular patterns of growth or things that we see in other players, you know, it can be something that turns heads. So regardless of our findings online, it definitely was something that reflected that his strength of play and his rise being as quick as it was over the last couple of years was definitely an interesting thing to note on a statistical level.
Okay. So we're going to come back to what Niemann is believed to have done, as you outline in your analysis on chess.com. But we should talk for a minute about Magnus Carlsen and why his involvement in this is such a big deal. I mean, he's what the biggest name in chess right now?
Yeah, he's the world champion of five times and a star that has truly transcended the game over the last couple decades, for sure.
Okay. And so what is it that Carlsen specifically has said that Niemann did that's really sort of blown open this controversy, honestly, like across the world? And so that, you know, people like even us here at On Point, I don't know all that much about chess, but the story is inescapable.
Well, yeah, you know, in some ways, it's what Magnus didn't say. He said he was no longer going to continue to compete in the 2022 Singapore Cup, which by itself was unprecedented. And later he did issue a statement that people can find on his Twitter account. And I'm not going to try to quote it verbatim, but, you know, he said that he believed that the cheating in chess was a very serious issue. It needed to be taken seriously. And that he felt that Hans Niemann wasn't necessarily being as forthcoming as he should be about his transgressions, if you will. And again, I'm obviously paraphrasing because I don't speak for Magnus. But yeah, it was undeniably something that put the world on notice, not just the chess world, but all those who follow chess on the periphery because of things like Magnus or like technology and the computer's role in it. So it's been a very, very big deal, right? Or we wouldn't be here for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So this when you say that there was a particular match in which Carlsen, I want to be sure I'm getting this right, in which he resigned. Is that right? In, was this in the Sinkfield Cup?
Yeah, so he didn't resign in the Sinkfield Cup. He withdrew from the event after losing to Hans Niemann, which is something that Magnus has never done. And should be noted that Magnus does not have a history of whatever someone would label that as being a poor sport or tantruming. It was a very, very big statement for him to make. And then he later was paired with Hans in an online event, and he chose to resign that game in protest, I guess you would say, of a continued statement behind his actions, and he chose not to play Hans in their next event in an online tournament.
Okay. So I want to understand then exactly how Niemann is alleged to have cheated in the face-to-face games, the one that I think Carlsen was particularly focused on. I mean, how could that happen in chess?
Well, again, I mean, we don't necessarily have evidence that he did cheat, right? And obviously Magnus stands by his actions. And I, you know, whether people like the form of protest Magnus is making, he's obviously forcing what I do agree to be a very important conversation on the chess world for us to face technology head on and to tackle what could be an issue with cheating. You know, obviously there's been a lot of, what would you say, a lot of interesting information on the internet about how Hans might have been receiving moves, and I won't go into all of that. But what I will say is this, is that one of the things I think people outside looking in at the chess world maybe don't appreciate at first glance is that it's not just that 20 years ago, IBM developed a supercomputer to beat Garry Kasparov, or really, I guess, 30 years ago in the 90s. It's that very quickly overnight, every chess computer that was free, available on eventually a handheld device like your phone, it was open source and anyone could get it on a slow internet connection, was not only better than every human, but you don't even necessarily have to play the best moves of the computer to outplay the best humans anymore. That's how far our artificially intelligent overlords, if you will, have come, right? They are the dominant beast in the chess world. And so if someone is getting information, it's not like stealing signs in baseball where all they have to do, where they get a sign, but they still have to execute on the fastball or the curveball. In chess, if you get inside information as to what the best move is from the computer, you're able to follow it blindly. And a grandmaster someone like at Hans Niemann's level of play or Magnus Carlsen's level of play would hardly even need any information. Even just a couple of tips per game would likely be enough to outplay a very, very strong grandmaster, even the world champion. And so, again, I don't have any evidence as to how Hans would have done it. I don't, as my report said, and you mentioned at the opening, you know, we take note of the anomalies, and we definitely are providing research and statistical evidence that perhaps it should be looked into further. But we don't necessarily have evidence to say he did. But if you believe Magnus, if someone is in that camp, and you understand that computers are so much better than humans, and that then all it comes down to is I guess you would say spyware. Is there a way for someone to get information in a chess game? And that's what a lot of people are looking into. It's what the chess world is tackling head on right now and trying to do something about.
But the critically important thing you're saying here, though, Danny, is that because the AI is so good, essentially, the algorithms are so good at chess right now that a grandmaster would, in addition with a grandmaster's natural talent, the grandmaster would only need a couple little nudges, right? So from the computer. But I'm not going to exactly say what some of the theories are, but it's kind of part of the almost like mind-bending surrealness of this scandal that someone, I think, originally on Reddit suggested that perhaps some kind of sex toy was involved.
I think it was actually Elon Musk who made it popular.
Yes.
But that's a whole nother.
Yes, Elon Musk then amplified it, I think, on his Twitter feed, this unsubstantiated claim. But that Niemann might have been receiving messages through vibrations of some sort. But moving on, though, the point is that no one's yet proven that he was cheating in the supposed over-the-board games. But if I have this right, has Hans Niemann admitted to cheating in the past on online games?
Indeed he has. And he first did so in his post-game interview at the Sinkfield Cup after round four. And at the time, he unfortunately, from our perspective, didn't tell the whole story. And so we felt the need to address it publicly. We did so immediately via our official Twitter and in a statement that I made on behalf of our company. And then later in our report, we confirmed that not only do we have evidence to suggest probable and likely cheating, but also we have a confession, and Hans has confessed to as much. And so as we normally do in those cases, especially when people are cooperating and confessing, we have no reason not to help them rejoin our site and eventually, you know, continue to play in games that matter. But yes, he had cheated, and he has confessed to doing so on our site.
And how does that happen on online chess?
You know, similar to what I described with over the board chess, you know, all you need is another device. There are times where people are cheating in more fundamental ways, easier ways for us to catch without revealing all of the algorithms and the ways that we detect this stuff, because it's obviously a super important part of not just catching cheaters, but how we continue to invest in our product and create great events for professionals. And we want to make sure we can catch those who would do wrong. So what I would say is, there are fundamental ways to cheat just on the same computer that you're using. There are in-browser plugins and things like that, but we can detect a lot of those fairly quickly. Sophisticated cheating is again, similar as it would be in an over-the-board face-to-face scenario. That would be with another device that is relaying moves, and you would be acting on those moves. And so where we've invested heavily over the last decade plus, and we're continuing to talk more and more about, partly because the discussion globally is asking us to, is, you know, I would say we were among the first to really invest in what I call CSI for chess, crime scene investigation. And when you really look at the DNA of who a person is, what they're capable of doing, most importantly, I would say the IOC really started having blood doping breakthroughs when they started measuring someone's, you know, oxygen levels and testosterone and white blood cell count, not just when they think they're cheating, but when they don't think they're cheating. And when you're able to establish what someone's DNA is, you're able to more quickly register and detect patterns that might not be that person's DNA, and therefore make, you know, CSI investigations to suggest, hey, this particular chess player was not the same chess player they were before.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so Danny, stand by for just a second. We're talking with Danny Rensch today. He's chief chess officer at chess.com, because we're taking a look at the scandal that's gripped the world of chess, the cheating scandal, over the past 6 months. But there's a deeper story here that Danny has illuminated for us, and that is how technology is really changing the game. So we'll talk more about that when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about a cheating scandal or cheating controversy that has gripped the world of chess. For the past 6 months, it's risen to the highest level of the international game. And talking about beneath that, the larger sort of sea changes that are happening in chess driven by online streaming and technology. And by the way, if you're a chess player, hop online. We're at Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio, and let us know how you think chess has changed, if it's changed, because of its worldwide accessibility now due to online platforms like chess.com, and whether that's changed the game for the good or whether technology could actually undermine the very soul of chess. I want to know. So hop online. We're at Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, we had mentioned again the person at the center of this chess controversy, American Grandmaster Hans Niemann. In a post-game interview, just after the chess.com report came out, Niemann repeated a phrase he uttered after his first unlikely win over Magnus Carlsen.
You know, this entire thing started with me saying chess speaks for itself, and I think this game spoke for itself and showed the chess player that I am, and it also showed that I'm not going to back down, and I'm going to play my best chess here regardless of the pressure that I'm under. And that's all I have to say about this game, and you know, chess speaks for itself, you know, that's all I can say.
Well, Danny Rensch joins us today. He's chief chess officer at chess.com. And Danny, you had a conversation with Hans Niemann, and he told you if I remember correctly, that he wasn't in the game for the prize money or the fame, but instead, like, he was earning a lot of money from online streaming that he said, quote, having a higher rating would mean people tune in more to my streams when I'm battling Hikaru, Danya, or Eric Hansen. I need people to believe that I'm a worthy rival to follow and subscribe. So can you tell us what he's talking about there, Danny, and about sort of what might have been Neiman's motivations?
Well, as you said, you know, I think technology has changed the game, and I would definitely say for the better. The chess professional ecosystem is now much broader than what it used to be. Being a chess pro is not just being a top 10 player in the world. You can earn an incredible living online as a streamer, as a content creator, as a coach, and obviously there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people doing it through chess.com. And so we're super proud of that. And the platform we've been able to give creators and streamers allows them to do it. And obviously the comments you're referring to are, you know, suggestive of the motivations people might have. I think people often have two questions. How would someone cheat in chess? And then the next question is why? And I think that people from the outside looking in maybe don't know initially just how incredibly exciting, how incredibly big the chess business, quote unquote, is these days. The world of chess online is a fantastic one with so many awesome creators and so many awesome people. And because chess at its core is already a game with a great mission, teaches people critical thinking and to think before they move, it does all these things that video games are still trying to convince people that they do. So I think that chess being what it is, the fact that we give a platform to all of these streamers and creators to make a living online has done some incredibly important things to grow the game. And that's where we continue to look for our opportunity. Unfortunately, obviously, as referenced, there are potentials for motivations for a lot of people, not just in prize events, but to be a creator of the highest platform so that, you know, you can get more fame, if you will, more followers and subscribers. But I would say the pros have greatly, greatly, greatly outweighed the cons, despite the comments there. And I think that creators with the opportunities they have now in the professional ecosystem are very different than they used to be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're not going to, you know, undermine the whole system or throw the baby out with the bathwater here, for sure. Certainly. But just give us a sense quickly, Danny, before I have to let you go. When you say the world of online chess is huge, how would you describe that? What metrics would you use to describe how big it is?
Well, you know, before a couple of crazy things happened in 2020 in a global pandemic, which brought a lot of people online to play games and watch content, and then a little Netflix show called The Queen's Gambit that a lot of people saw, we had about 1 million daily active users and just about 3.5 million monthly. Chess.com now has 20 million monthly active users and over 5 million daily active users. So that's 5 million unique human beings around the world logging in every day to play chess. And that's before we talk about those consuming chess, you know, on all of these other platforms by people like Hikaru and Levi Rosman, Gotham Chess, or the Botez sisters. So just on chess.com, we look at more than 20 million monthly active users, more than 5 million daily active users. And we have a lot of opportunities ahead to continue to see that grow with so many people of different genres and interests getting into chess. And you see it everywhere from NFL stars playing in events on our site to celebrities. And so it's a fun and interesting time to be in chess, and definitely something that we think is going to continue in the years to come.
Well, Danny Rensch, Chief Chess Officer at chess.com, joining us today from Phoenix, Arizona. Thank you so much, Danny.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to actually talk to some of the world's biggest players in just a minute here, but I want to hear for a moment from Aishwarya Kumar, a staff writer at ESPN, who's written extensively about not only the Neiman-Carlsen controversy in chess, but the underlying changes that have been happening in the game. And she says, this is how she describes how much the game has changed in the past 2 years.
Before the pandemic, you know, online chess was where new and relatively unknown players just sort of played to get a sense of tournaments, to get a sense of gameplay, to get a sense of openings, and like they could practice and they could perfect their art there. But once the pandemic set in, you know, the money moved online and the top players moved where the money moved. So grandmasters began playing big time tournaments online. And the two worlds sort of collided.
Well, joining us now is Levi Rosman, with us from New York. He's a chess international master who became a full-time commentator and content creator. And under the name Gotham Chess, he's become the world's most popular chess YouTuber with 1.7 million subscribers. Levi Rosman, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks so much for having me.
It is great to have you. Also with us now is Anna Kramling, joining us from Stockholm, one of the most popular chess players on the streaming platform Twitch. She's also the daughter of two grandmasters as well. Anna, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
It's great to have both of you. So first of all, Levi, I'm just going to start with you. I'd love to hear just your take quickly on the import, if any, of this, the scandal that we've been talking about, the Neiman Carlson scandal. Does it truly matter in the sort of long-term view in the world of chess?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I think it definitely does matter. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more cooperation, hopefully, between the major chess online entities, like, of course, like a chess.com, as well as the international governing body of the game. So we're going to have a very clear pipeline, I hope, between what happens if you're caught cheating online and what that means for your over-the-board career. I'm sure we're going to have enhanced security measures. And obviously, as a content creator, I would be a bit biased if I didn't say that it obviously benefits our viewership, right? I mean, more people are now interested in the game and getting back into it and going, oh, yeah, I forgot about chess. You know, I'm going to go give it a shot again. This drama is kind of interesting and intriguing. So I think more people come to the game of chess from the standpoint of an epic, grandiose thing like Queen's Gambit on Netflix, but also some controversy is never a bad thing.
Mm. Anna, same question to you. What do you think?
No, I totally agree. And I think that anti-cheating measures are definitely going to become much more prominent, which is very important in a world of technology. But obviously, like Levi said as well, for us content creators, we've definitely seen a rise in viewership from people that have gone into chess again after hearing about all this drama.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about about the content that you create. What is it like if I'm a viewer coming to your Twitch channel, Anna? What am I seeing while you play?
Well, I try to do as many different things as possible with chess. I try to not just play. I've wanted to do a lot of different things that are chess oriented. So I've, for instance, traveled a lot and both played chess, but also shown how the behind the scenes of different big tournaments are. So I try to really vary my content. But typically, I do just play chess against different people and just explain my moves to try to teach people a bit of chess and improve.
And who are you playing against while you do this?
I either play against my viewers or I play against different people in tournaments. For instance, there is this one tournament in chess.com called Title Tuesday, where I'm able to play against a bunch of really strong titled players. So I try to show people my strong games and explain my moves, etc.
Okay. And how many people regularly are viewing your play over Twitch?
Well, in Twitch, you typically measure it through average viewers. So how many people are watching at a certain point of time. And my average viewership is typically between 1,500 people and 2,000 people. But obviously that is just in, any second. So then you just have to like amount that into like the total viewership of a total stream.
I see. Okay. So Levi, same set of questions for you. When you're playing online, what exactly are we seeing? And, tell us about that experience as well.
Yeah, sure. I think my stream is definitely a bit different, more chaotic than Anna's. And that's kind of the benefit of having so many really folks on camera nowadays playing chess. I would say that for me, watching me on Twitch is kind of like maybe seeing your teacher in a supermarket, like outside of the classroom, or let's say playing a sport or being a bit rowdy. So for me, it's almost a bit like a chess therapy. I'm also playing games against either my viewers or just in the pool or on Title Tuesday, as Anna described. I'm cracking jokes. We've got music playing, and it's sort of just one big living room hangout. And the most important thing for me there is to keep the audience interested in the game, laughing at me, laughing at each other, and just sort of having a good time. The difference is on YouTube, I generally tend to be a little bit more serious because it's a 30-minute packaged content. So you've got to get to the point. You've got to make sure viewers are hooked and captivated. But on Twitch, you have a little bit more free-flowing action. You can obviously make some jokes. You can have some bloopers and so on.
Okay. You know, I'm going to get back to what it's like to play today in the rapidly growing world of chess. But I should have asked both of you, actually, at the beginning, sort of your stories on how you came to the game. How old were you? I mean, Anna, obviously, you have two parents who are excellent chess players. I mean, how old were you when you started playing, and what captivated you about the game?
Oh, wow. When I started playing, I was probably like 3 years old. I mean, I'm not sure if I was eating the pieces more than I was actually playing with them. But I mean, I've seen chess my whole life, from traveling to tournaments with my parents. Like, even when my mom was pregnant with me, she was traveling with me. So I've really been at tournaments ever since I was born. And I've always seen chess. And I think that when I was younger, I just got really motivated by especially seeing my mother playing, and I always wanted to do what she was doing, and I wanted to be like her. So I would definitely say that she was a really big inspiration for me. I remember when I was like 5 years old, and she didn't think that I knew what castling was. And she basically, you know, just moved her king. And I said, "Mom, Mom, you can castle. How do you not know about this?" So I was like trying to teach her about chess. So I've played chess my whole life, ever since I was very, very young. My first tournament was at 5 years old. And I kept on playing competitively until the age of 17, traveling to World Junior Championships, European Youth Championships, etc. But then at the age of 17, a little bit before the pandemic hit, I decided to start doing commentary of chess because I realized that there's a lot of different things you can do with chess. And I'd had a little bit of a bad streak, and I just wanted to try something new. So I decided to do chess commentary. And after that, I realized that this is actually really fun. I can combine two things that I love, which is talking and playing chess, and, you know, do my own thing with that. So that is basically when I decided that I wanted to start doing content creation with chess.
Yeah. Anna, one more question to you about, like, how does it feel in your body when you're in the middle of a really excellent game, right? And you're playing with someone who's challenging you in new and different ways with their gameplay. Like, how does it feel when you're sort of in that moment where chess is the thing that your life has been called for?
It's amazing. I mean, you just feel like the biggest adrenaline rush, and you just feel like a sort of happiness that I just don't really think that I feel with anything else. Especially when I know that I've played a really beautiful game and I'm sitting there and it's intense and I'm just, you know, at the very end of the game. It's just amazing. And you're so in your bubble that you don't really think or feel anything else than what you're doing right there.
Well, Levy, same question for you. I'd love to hear a little bit of your story about how you became one of the biggest names in chess. How old were you when you started playing?
Yeah, my story is, once again, a bit different. Neither of my parents play chess competitively. They know the basics. I'm from a Russian Jewish background, so it's kind of ingrained a little bit in growing up in the culture. So when I was 6 or 7, I think 6 years old, my parents wanted to sign me up for an after-school program. And I was always running around. I couldn't sit still. So chess just didn't seem like a logical thing to put me into. It seemed much more logical to do something like arts and crafts. But I loved chess. I don't know what it was, but I completely got absorbed by the game. And I kept skipping the arts class. So I just never went to the arts class after school. I played in my first chess tournament when I was 7. And I was playing basically my entire childhood. But I didn't grow up in a chess family, and I didn't really grow up in a chess ecosystem. I didn't go to a school with a lot of chess players, and it wasn't cool in school to be a chess player. You sort of got teased for it. It was not something that you really wore proudly. So I never knew I wanted to stick to chess as a career. I mean, even up until college in 2017, 2016, I was teaching chess. That was really my profession, and I was making the tough choice of, do I go the corporate route? Do I do something with my statistics degree, or do I stick to teaching chess? And around 2018, 2019, I started doing more Twitch streaming, but that was really at late night hours, 9 p.m., 10 p.m., up to 3, 4 in the morning, to like 30, 40 viewers. So just compare that to what chess is being viewed by today. And 2020 was kind of the big turnaround. The world shut down. Everybody was back inside. And I was teaching my 6 and 7 year old students on Zoom, and watching this kind of chess explosion on Twitch and on YouTube, I kind of said, okay, I have to make this decision now to pass on that one job, kind of close that chapter of my career of being a chess teacher and go the full-time route online. And I haven't looked back.
Does it feel the same playing online as it does playing over the board? Is the psychological element of how you play similar or different?
Oh, it's definitely different for sure. First of all, over the board is far more intense. There's no escaping kind of the opponent or the agony of realizing that you've made a bad move. Everything is a lot more fast online, and you have that initial response, but everything over the board is longer. The game could go 3, 4, 5 hours. You feel your whole body kind of working, everything from jubilation to just the absolute depths of sorrow. It's definitely a totally different experience. But playing online, like Anna said, we get chances to play people we would never get to play because they're thousands of miles away, or we're just not at the same level. If we get paired in a tournament online against them because we just happen to have the same score, it's incredible.
Well, today we're joined by two of the world's best-known chess players, definitely online and also over the board. Levy Rosman and Anna Kramling are with us, and we started talking about the controversy that's been gripping the world of chess over the past 6 months, but we're moving more deeply now into this question of how has technology, online streaming, and computer ability to play been changing the game of chess? So more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about how the world of chess has been rapidly changing with the advent of online and streaming technologies, with the accessibility that technology gives chess to players around the world, and now, of course, with a major alleged cheating scandal that has been gripping the world of chess for the past half year. I'm joined today by Anna Kramling. She's one of the most popular chess players on Twitch and herself the daughter of two grandmasters and a woman master herself. And Levy Rosman is also with us. He's a chess international master, became a full-time commentator and content creator. He's become the world's most popular chess YouTuber. Now, Anna and Levy, I just want to hear another voice quickly, because as we've been talking about, the two of you and your careers show that chess as a streaming sport is booming. But the question which I want to get into a little bit is how much is that actually changing the very, very top of the game? Because that world is still largely governed by those over-the-board face-to-face battles in a world championship. So, for example, when chess's governing body invited Grandmaster Hikaru Nakamura to play in its Grand Prix back in April, apparently that raised some eyebrows because Nakamura's 34. He's been a Grandmaster since the age of 15. He's a 5-time U.S. national champion and number 6 in the world. So no problem there. But he's also number 1 on Twitch. He's got 1.5 million followers and streams for hours and hours every day. Now, all that streaming has meant that Nakamura hadn't played a proper full-on chess tournament, I guess those over-the-board tournaments, since 2019. This is kind of an interesting story that I'm only recently catching up on myself. But to give you an idea of what he gets up to, once Nakamura started a chess.com account from scratch and rose to the top 40, despite playing every game with what could be described as nonsensical openings he calls the Bong Cloud, which is why critics said that inviting him to the Grand Prix was like giving a spot on a hockey team to someone who had only played on the internet. But Nakamura won the Grand Prix. So after his victory, he was asked whether all the streaming might have actually helped.
Obviously, playing every day, I think, keeps you sharper. I mean, The question is whether you can still play the openings reasonably well or not. I mean, that's sort of the sacrifice you make when you play. But I think in terms of just practically speaking, I mean, I've played more than anybody over the last couple of years, and I think it definitely helped for sure.
So Anna, does online play and, you know, the amount that Nakamura has been doing, does it actually help over the board play in those major international tournaments?
I think that what most people that are very strong, such as Nakamura, do is that they kind of separate how they play online and how they play over the board. So, for instance, all the openings, or at least most of them, that Nakamura plays online, he will probably not play over the board because that would lead to a lot of people being able to prepare against him. So I do think that what would help him is the fact that, just like you said, he plays every single day. He's constantly thinking about chess. And in a way, he has also said in the past that he's more relaxed now because playing chess professionally is not his only profession. He also has streaming. So I think that that is like one of the things that that could help him to just be more relaxed, basically.
Okay, so Levy, Anna brings up something interesting. I wonder if, you know, in my somewhat romanticized view of the world of chess, I'll admit, driven by The Queen's Gambit on Netflix, there was always this belief that when there was novel play or really wildly creative strategies, like, you had to take some time to learn them, right? Because you had to, like, go to the books or watch the players themselves, and chances for that weren't as frequent as obviously they are online. So, in a sense, does all the streaming allow sort of new forms of play to proliferate through the world of chess much, much faster than before? And how has that changed the game?
Yeah, this is an incredibly fascinating talking point. So essentially, when we talk about new and novel ways to play, we're talking about something about the first 10 or 15 moves of a game, the opening phase. And historically, the way that's worked is that you have something called theory, which is generally accepted best play in the first stage, and all the top players agree upon that theory. That began to evolve when computers came along, because they would be able to suggest various methods of play nobody ever thought of before. And specifically in the last 2 or 3 years, as you described, everything has accelerated. Hundreds of thousands of games have now been played online that normally wouldn't have. So the progression of these developments in the opening phases of chess have just skyrocketed. And the availability of resources to learn all of these things through books or online courses has also skyrocketed. So that combined with computers makes it actually extremely challenging to save your ideas. Back in the day, you're right, there was a romanticized view. Some of those Queen's Gambit clips were fascinating. Like, you could play a game of chess that nobody had ever seen before, and nobody would see that certain move played on move 7 for another 6 months or a year. Mm. Now that seventh move is played 5,000 more times over the next 30 days online. So it has changed the game. I don't know if it's for better or worse. I don't know if we're extracting way too much information and soon we're going to run out of resources. But it's accelerated the level and understanding of the game like we never thought was possible.
I mean, that sounds like it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, I would think. But I will say, back in the day, I could pick up a chess book that came out in April of a certain year with a certain opening idea, and I could use it successfully for the remainder of the year. With, like, let's say a 75% win rate, I can't do that anymore. So to actually be a professional chess player nowadays, it's basically a full-time job. You cannot part-time it. You can't do 10 hours. It's a 40-hour week, if not more, of constant learning, constantly trying to be ahead of the curve. It's good, but it's very stressful for the people who are trying to stay at the top.
Oh, that's interesting. So in that sense, it doesn't make chess all that different from all the demands on esports players in all other types of fields, Anna?
No, for sure. No, just like Levy was mentioning, back in the day, you could basically trick someone if you knew an opening trap, or if you knew, you know, you've come up with your own opening and it hadn't, like, been played that much. But nowadays, everything is played all the time, and you cannot really trick someone in higher levels because people already know about everything, basically. So you definitely need to work all the time and stay on top of all theory all the time if you're going to be a professional chess player.
Okay. So this brings me to something that Danny Rench at chess.com was saying earlier, and that many other people have observed. And that is, no matter how much you play, Anna, or how much you play, Levy, no matter how good you get, and you are at the top of the world of chess, the AI is going to be better than you. I mean, that Danny was saying that's basically already the truth, that computer play is going to be better than even the best human could possibly be. As two of the best humans playing chess right now, what do you think about that? How does that make you feel, Anna?
I think that I've just accepted it at this point. Throughout my life, it's always been that way, that an engine is always going to beat a human. And I think that I just try to see it from the point of view that we can learn so much from engines. It can really help us elevate our own play, that I've just accepted the fact that engines are always going to be better.
And Levy, what about you?
Well, I definitely have accepted it, but I will also add the fact that anytime I am in a place where I can interact with technology, I always try to see if there's a chess bot. So for example, on an airplane, you always try to have a rivalry with the robot that's playing on your device right in front of you on a little television. But my funniest story in this is I once was at a Texas hotel for a chess tournament, and I got on a treadmill, wanted to get some exercise before the game, and I saw the treadmill had a digital chess interactive game on it, and it beat me. I lost the game of chess to a treadmill, and I really wish that I remembered this game because I would love to make it a YouTube video because that is incredible. Soon we're going to have chess playing refrigerators. You're just going to be able to get beaten by a chess AI in every, and a toaster could be able to beat you. So it's fascinating. It's kind of hilariously sad, but there are many more ways that humans can learn from computers without actually being overtaken by them in a way that chess will no longer exist. It's just in many ways, it's sort of morphing between the two. You come to a game prepared with some ideas that your computer came up with, but you still have to play the game yourself. And you know, you're a human at the end of the day. You have emotions, you're risk averse or the opposite. So I think we'll figure it out, at least for the next 100 years.
Well, so we heard a little bit earlier from Aishwarya Kumar, ESPN reporter who's been reporting on the changes in chess over the past few years. We talked to her a little bit more, and she mentioned that when Deep Blue, IBM's Deep Blue, beat Garry Kasparov back in 1997, which is basically eons in the past now, back then it was entirely possible that the game could have gone the other way, that Kasparov could have won. But as we mentioned, nowadays that's just not going to happen. Humans are not going to beat the machines as they play. But instead, maybe they've teamed up with them. Because here's what Aishwarya told us about a conversation she recently had with Grandmaster Jeremy Zhang.
He said he still goes and looks up a lot of the openings that Bobby Fischer and Garry Kasparov and a lot of these old school players made. And then he would use AI to help him perfect those moves. And then it becomes a combination of human beings and AI that's helping him be the best that he can possibly be. And I thought that was really poetic in where we are headed, because it's like, it's not either or, it's definitely a combination of the two.
So where are we headed in the world of chess with the very soul of the game? And here's what Aishwarya said to that.
Levon Aronian, the grandmaster, said to me, machines can play music, but it's the human being that gives music its soul. And I thought that was really poignant and beautiful in sort of the hope that the chess world has in making sure that the game retains its essence and its purity, and that, you know, all of the rest of the world is working to make sure that we can figure out a way to keep this game that has existed for 1,500 years in a way that's respectful to both the game, but also recognizing that these changes are bound to take place because of AI.
So that's Aishwarya Kumar, staff writer at ESPN. I mean, Anna, am I over romanticizing it a little when I think that, you know, chess is such a beautiful expression of human intelligence and creativity, right? I mean, the very metaphor of what the game is supposed to stand for, of like, you know, a battle, a war, a fundamentally human action of engagement with another. Does it stand to lose its soul if we know that, as Levy said, like treadmills and refrigerators could beat us in the game?
I mean, maybe a little bit in some way, but I still think that the soul of the game, the fact that there's two people that are battling each other, I think that that's beautiful. And even at the highest levels, even if most players there are playing a lot like an engine to a certain point. We can still see, you know, different styles in each player. Some players are more defensive, some players are more aggressive. So everyone brings a little part of themselves to the game, I believe. So I still want to think that it is this battle that's very beautiful between human beings.
Okay. And Levy, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I echo that point. I think when I talk about treadmills and refrigerators, it's sort of for comedic effect. But at the same time, we've sort of accepted the computer is better than the human. But that's a good thing that humans are still around and actively competing to get to the top. And just the fact that there is an entity out there that's technological that we will never get to that level, that doesn't stop the world of chess from evolving, because it's still a fascinating game. And now there are many more personalities in it than ever before. The learning material is not boring. It's not dry. You always have somebody that you can watch that captivates your attention if you don't like watching somebody else. And we have to not forget the fact that Shannon's number still exists, which is basically the fact that after X amount of moves in the first part of a game, there are hypothetically billions of positions, right? So humans still have to go and explore these territories. And with the assistance of the computer in their preparation and giving them ideas, that's probably the best relationship that we're going to get. Humans will just continuously get better at the game using the computer as like a sensei, if you will, just pointing us in directions, making us think of chess in ways that we never did. But just because the computer is better than us, I don't think it poses such an existential threat to the game.
Do both of you, which form of play do you prefer? Over the board, Levy, or online?
Oh, that's a tough one. If I have to choose one right now, I'm going to say online, because I get to play so many great players from the comfort of my own home. But I will say that on a different day, if maybe I was in a different mood, I would say that the whole online, over the board component is just so exhilarating and exciting. But I'll go with online.
Mm. And Anna, what about you?
I think I would actually probably say over the board, just because the feelings that I feel when I'm playing over the board chess, I don't feel them when I'm playing online. I mean, the agony, the happiness, the everything, it's just a certain point of extreme that I just love. So I love the fact that I can play online every day, and I love the accessibility of it. And, you know, I absolutely love it. But I think I would choose over the board if I could only do one thing for the rest of my life. Yeah.
So I wonder if this is one of the things that we will continue to see with chess's massive expansion around the world, and that technology is really good at bringing new people into a world, right? Especially during the pandemic, there was a lot of people who maybe started playing chess who otherwise would have never been able to play in group settings. But once they become part of that world, maybe locally more local face-to-face over-the-board tournaments might take place, so that people can also get that feeling that you've described, Anna. What do you think, that's possible as we go up forward?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of people will keep on just playing online, but I do think that some people will want to experience over-the-board chess, which is a very different type of chess. And one point that I want to add is just that I think the technology has also helped a lot of people to sort of feel like they are at a much higher level of chess than what they would think they are otherwise when they're following high-level games, because they can always have the engine looking at those games. So I think that's another really cool thing that technology has helped us do.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. Well, Anna Kramling, one of the most popular chess players on Twitch, daughter of two grandmasters and herself a woman master, with us from Stockholm. And it's been a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And Levy Rosman, chess international master, full-time commentator and content creator, world's most popular chess YouTuber under the name Gotham Chess. Levy, it's been excellent to have you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And one last little note here. I want to squeeze in a plug for our On Point newsletter. It's just once a week, packed full of interesting information about the show and what's to come. Go over to onpointradio.org if you're interested in it and sign up for our newsletter. Thanks so much. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.